WSJS Winston-Salem, Greensboro, High Point, Burlington. Online at WSJS.com. The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given. That's a given.
Even better.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out, crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Happy Friday. Here we go. It is The Drive right here on WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. I am Will Dalton, also known as the WD. And we have just, I mean, happy Friday it really is. Like, just a stacked show, tons of things to get into. Mike Maniscalco of FanDuel Sports Network, gonna join us in hour number two. Glad to have you with us, however you're watching. YouTube or X, you can get on our stream there, or however you are listening on the many ways that you can listen to WSJS, WSJS.com. We appreciate you doing that. Canes, take game two. Sound it! Sound it! Oh, yeah. The first two games of this series. That's what playoff hockey should feel like. That's what playing for a Stanley Cup should feel like. Because quite frankly, it's not playoff hockey. It's not the Stanley Cup, truly, until it's taken years off of your life. That's really what it is. That's what it's all about. So, while we acknowledge that Vegas is a much different beast than Montreal, this series feels eerily similar to the Eastern Conference Finals. You lose game one in a pretty rough fashion, and then you find life in game two. Now, took the Hurricanes a little longer to find that life in game two of this series than it did in the Eastern Conference Finals, but nonetheless, it kind of happened the same way. And when you look at last night, things were fairly even in terms of shots on goal. Like, I looked up at one point and, like, Canes had 26 and Vegas had like 24. So, like, they stayed pretty even for the shots on goal. A lot of this game, and that's something that was a little different because the Canes, they've been really good, one of the best teams in these playoffs defensively in terms of preventing teams from being able to get a shot off. And Vegas kind of matched that energy a little bit for a lot of last night. But the third period, that is where this game just got nutty. It got crazy, man. So the Canes are down 2-0, and Stank scores. Then not even 2 minutes later, Jankowski scores. Tie game at the time. And then you have Jordan Staal, who sends it up 3-2 on a power play goal. And power play's been a bit of a problem for Carolina here lately. And then Freddie Anderson, who really went through it in game one, had an all-time third period. You had that shot that ended up being reviewed where, I mean, his whole body, like, they showed the overhead shot on the camera, and, like, his whole body is covering the puck, and then the play's called dead. Then it goes into the net. They had to review it. And then not too long after that, he got a pretty big stop on a Vegas power play with under 2 minutes to play. Now, Vegas would score with about 1:21 to go to tie things up at 3-3 to send it to OT. But Freddie Anderson, what a night. What a period in that third period that was just insane. But I will say this. How fit, and we just mentioned the power play a little bit. How fitting was it that it was on a power play goal, yet a power play sent it, gave you the lead, Jordan Staal, but then it was another power play in OT, Seth Jarvis being the guy to net that goal. How fitting that both of those things were the reasons you won. The power play has been very heavily criticized. I mean, I saw a stat at 237, the 237 mark in the first period last night that Carolina had only gotten one shot off on goal in the last four power plays. In this, the four power plays that they had had so far in these Stanley Cup finals. And it's just not been good in these playoffs overall. And Seth Jarvis has been part of that line that's been really criticized with Svech, with Aho. They've taken a lot of criticism because as the playoffs, the stage increases, the noise gets louder. And we've started to hear that. And Seth Jarvis with an absolute beauty of a goal to win this thing. I mentioned Mike Maniscalco is going to join us in hour number two. Here he was and Tripp Tracy. This is a great chance to go to our YouTube channel right now to see this. But if you can't, here's what it sounded like last night on the call. No audio there. We'll get back to that later. We'll get back to that a little later on. Mike Maniscalco lost his mind. Tripp Tracy went flying across the room because he always elbows Mike when big things happen, when goals are scored. And this time Mike like play pushed him and Tripp just goes flying across the room. It was terrific. Mike going to join us, like I said, in hour number two. But here's an interesting stat for you. In 82 years, Carolina became the first team since the 1944 Canadiens to win a Stanley Cup final game after trailing by multiple goals in the final 10 minutes of regulation. They became the first team in 82 years to do that. So, kudos to the Canes. You know what the thing was? They actually played really well in the first period, first two periods. They just didn't have a goal to show for it. They just didn't. And Rod Brind'Amour, he kind of pointed that out after the game last night. And ultimately, the Canes broke through. Here he was talking about it.
We had a great first again, and didn't get rewarded for it. And if you follow our team enough, that's happened a lot. So I think we're used to not going our way when it should. We should have had a few more. That shouldn't have been down one after that period. And it's just kind of normal. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. And then we were kind of dud in the second. We took some penalties. It got us on our heels. And then the first 10 minutes of the third wasn't great. And then somebody had to step up. Somebody had to make a play. And that's what happens. Stanks makes a play. All of a sudden, you get the building going again, and then somebody else made a play. Will Carey makes an unbelievable play. And then Jenks, great shot. So all of a sudden, now the games start over and, you know, go from there. So long answer to your question, but someone had to step up and make a play.
And Seth Jarvis was that guy. Canes, even the series, one apiece. It's been a great battle so far. It's been a heavyweight fight, back and forth, back and forth. Took a little longer for the Carolina to get their punches in last night, but they got them in, and when they did, it was in a big way. And they head to Vegas this weekend. It's a travel day for him today. Mike Maniscalco, he's got a flight to catch after he gets done with us later on in the show, and we'll see what happens when they get to Vegas. Morgan Corson.
We'll do it live.
Oh, okay. Boy.
We'll do it live!
Yeah, I should have known this was coming. I should have known. Yes, Morgan.
So, Super Regional started today.
Yes, they did.
Only four games on the slate today for Supers. The big schedule starts tomorrow. But West Virginia beats the brakes off of Cal Poly in the Morganton Super Regional, which is an electric environment. If you didn't see that, you got to see some of these highlights. 12-2 was the final in that. UNC is beating USC. 3-1 in the bottom of the third. And later on tonight at 5, Little Rock takes on Troy. And Ole Miss takes on number 4 Auburn at 8 p.m.
I love Super Regional Friday. I love it. Thank you so much for that update. Really appreciate that. No, I've got the Carolina USC game in the studio right here, where Carolina just got a runner on. USC's pitcher plunked the runner as he was on his way to first base on like a swinging bunt type deal. USC had a solo homer an inning ago. That's where that one run came from. No, West Virginia was lit. West Virginia was lit today. Pat McAfee was over there behind the plate. He had one of those Yeti cups where you can't see what was in it. I got a few theories. He seemed to be enjoying himself. Pat's yoked, man. He is jacked. Like, if you look at him now, the last couple of years compared to years ago when he first started, like, he is jacked now. Like, my man takes good care of himself. But, no, I was watching that West Virginia game from the start. They had a 3-run homer in the bottom of the first to get things started. And then they had a grand slam later on in the bottom of the fourth to make it 8-1. Just a beatdown that took place in Morgantown earlier today. We'll obviously keep you posted on that. Let's move it to college basketball very quickly, though, because such an obvious miss. Such an obvious miss that we all knew was going to happen. We all knew it was coming. What am I talking about? ACC, SEC challenges, schedule matchups were released last night. And no, NC State and LSU are not going to play. Will Wade is not going to get a crack at NC State. NC State fans, of course, LSU is hosting. They're hosting Wake Forest, by the way. So at least they get one member of the Big Four, but it's not the one that we wanted to see with respect to Wake Forest. I mean, we needed to see Justin Gainey's squad go up against whatever EuroLeague roster Will Wade is putting together over in Baton Rouge. We needed that. But we weren't going to get it. You know why? Because it was too easy. It was too obvious. It made too much sense. And that's why we're not getting it. Now, Wake Forest, they actually played LSU in Will Wade's first go-round with the Tigers. Go Tigers. And they actually gave Wake Forest their only loss in the first 12 games of the 21-22 season. Fun fact. But that's who's actually going to be going to Baton Rouge to face Will Wade's crew. Meanwhile, UNC going to host John Calipari in Arkansas. That is the first time that Arkansas has ever played in Chapel Hill. Didn't know that. First time for everything, they say. So John Calipari going to be coming in to face Michael Malone. Still can't believe I just said that, in Chapel Hill. And then, this is fun, Duke, Florida. Rematch from a year ago where that was a battle at Cameron. And one could argue Florida actually probably should have won the game, but Duke ended up pulling that one out. So this is going to be a rematch down at the Swamp this time around. And NC State, if you're wondering who they drew, they're going to be hosting South Carolina. So that's who you got there. So that's where the Big Four is going to be at. Some of the other interesting draws here. Florida State, who I'm already hearing Tennessee fans, why did we get Florida State? Like, Florida State was actually pretty good in the second half of the season last year. I wouldn't expect a casual to know that, and especially a casual SEC fan that didn't watch the ACC. But they actually were pretty good. They got pretty good, and they've gotten better in Coach Locke's second year there. So that'll be a nice test for the Seminoles. I think I like Tennessee to win it, but that'll be in Knoxville. Then you got SMU not playing because, you know, there's an uneven amount of teams here, so SMU not going to play in it. Kentucky, they're going to play at Virginia. That's going to be a good game to watch. Alabama will be at Miami. And Texas going to be going to the Yum Center to face Louisville. So that's some of the notable. Cal also not going to be in it. So there you go. 18 SEC team or 18 ACC teams to 16 SEC teams. Two had to be left out. This year, it's going to be Cal and SMU. Nobody cares. Because they're the reason that we can't get like multiple matchups between Carolina and NC State and like rivalries we actually care about. That's why. So they can stay out of this. I don't care.
Facts, feelings, and the occasional bad idea. Welcome to The Drive, the Triad's longest running live sports talk show.
Back at it on The Drive right here on WSJS, 336-777-1600. We are taking your phone calls, your reactions to the Carolina Hurricanes evening up the series with Vegas, and your prediction for game two between the Knicks and the Spurs, which I personally believe is a must-win for the Spurs. And it's a must-win for the Spurs in this context. Because I can already hear people say, it's the NBA Finals. Every game's a must-win. Again, context, nuance matters. It does. Don't let anybody tell you different. There's a lot more gray than black and white out here in the world. The reason I think it's a must-win for the Spurs is because Madison Square Garden is different. New York City is different. It's back on the final stage for the first time since 1999 when the Spurs and the Knicks met back then, and I can tell you right now, I mean, the Knicks could have been down 0-2 going into this game three on Monday at MSG, and it still would have been a madhouse in Manhattan. Gotham, if the Spurs are down 0-2 going into game three in MSG, oh, that's going to be a problem. Gotham City is going to be a problem on Monday. Even Batman wouldn't be able to do nothing with it. Just forget it. Batman, Joker, Catwoman, all of them. May as well just go high. That's right. And who else but Stephen A. Smith would know this? He would know this better than anybody else. One, he is a Knicks fan. And two, he's from this area. And he's been covering a lot of high-level basketball for a long time. Here's what he had to say about this yesterday on his podcast.
You don't understand what Monday is going to be like in New York City. The subways will never be more packed. Don't drive your cars in Midtown. I'm trying to tell you, it'll be a parking lot. There is nothing short of madness that is coming the way of everybody come Monday. You don't understand. You don't understand. I have been covering sports for over 30 years. And I'm telling you right now, come Monday for game three of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden, I expect to see an environment I have never seen in my entire career covering sports. You don't understand.
I think we do understand. I mean, it is true though. You see the way Knicks fans travel. You see the way their stars travel, like Timothée Chalamet and Spike Lee and Ben Stiller, just to name a few. They travel. Even the casual Knicks fans travel. To the point where the other night in game one of the Knicks beating San Antonio, in the final couple of minutes as the Knicks were pulling away, there were cheers when Jalen Brunson would hit these shots. Cheers in San Antonio. A lot of Knicks fans out there. Bandwagon or not, they're out there. And that was on the road. You bring this thing back to the Big Apple and the Spurs, let's just pretend they go down 0-2 here. Oh, buddy. I'm not gonna go as far as Stephen A. said, where he said this series probably won't come back to San Antonio. I don't see a sweep happening. However, that's a problem for the Spurs. Now, let's zoom out here and look at everything. The Spurs, getting to them here, they don't seem too worried about much of anything. In fact, to the point where when you listen to them talk, they don't even seem to think that they lost game one because of the Knicks. They seem to feel like they lost game one just because they weren't good enough. Here was Wemby yesterday talking about the loss.
Really, I think the reason we lost that game isn't even technical. It's not even technical, tactical. It's we need to approach the game with a better mental state, and we just need to play our game. You know, we just need to be normal.
Yeah. Didn't hear anything about the Knicks in there. Yeah, they were just so good. Nah, he's like, oh, we lost this game. Stephon Castle yesterday kind of echoed something similar.
I don't think we have anything to be too worried about. I mean, obviously, we feel like we're the better team, and we didn't play well and still had a chance to win. So, I mean, yeah, if we take one thing from that, just going back to being ourselves and, you know, focusing on the right things.
Not too worried about it. Listen, the thing I've noticed in these playoffs, everybody thinks they're better than the Knicks until it's time to be better than the Knicks, and then it doesn't happen. The Knicks have won 12 straight games. I don't think we can ignore that anymore and just say, oh, it was just the East. Nah, I think they're actually that good. I think they're playing that well right now. 11 double-digit wins in these playoffs. I think that's something to be reckoned with. Don't forget, analytically, the Cavaliers thought they should be up 2-0 against the Knicks. Guess what? They got handled. So we've seen and heard things like this before in these playoffs. With that said, I think the Spurs get it done tonight. I think they even it up.
In the NBA Finals all time, teams that go down 2-0 have only won the series 5 times.
Wow, that's a heck of a stat.
32-5. That's 86.5% of the time you go down 2-0, you lose.
And that's not an MSG. So, that's really a problem. But I think the Spurs win tonight. I just dropped my pen. That's great.
I do too. And have you seen Elmo catching slack from the Knicks fans?
Elmo's getting lit up like a Christmas tree.
Because Elmo said, I hope both teams have fun time. And apparently Elmo, Sesame Street's based in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And the Knicks fans are burning Elmo.
And then you had Knicks fans out here posting pictures that Grover took with Amari Stoudemire and Carmelo Anthony back in the days. Like, hey, Grover's moving right. Oscar probably is too. Get with the program, Elmo. Spurs even it up tonight. They do. They're 4-1 after losses in these playoffs. It is very conflicting, though, because both of these teams are confident as hell. So confident. You see Jalen Brunson looking like a Jedi with the hood on at the press conference. He doesn't even want to be in the same room with the Larry O'Brien trophy. That's a fact. Like, in these advertisements where, like, they preview the games or whatever and the trophy might be in the room, he won't go in the room with it. He don't want it till he wins. I love that energy. I love it. So it's very difficult, but I think the Spurs even it up tonight. I think they're going to defend, or I think they're going to find a different way to defend Cat. Cat was a bit of a defensive problem, or a problem for Wemby on the defensive side of the ball. So the Spurs might have to change up how they defend him, but who the Spurs, that game one performance, that's not who these Spurs have been. It's not. That was their lowest field goal percentage of the season, not just the playoffs. They only had 16 assists. I think they're going to move the ball a little better tonight. I do. So they're young and they have inexperience on this stage, but they're a really confident group. You heard Castle. You heard it. And they have the ultimate trump card in Victor Wembanyama. So they even the series. It goes back to MSG tied.
Your team, your take.
Let's get the show going.
Your drive home.
Back at it on the drive right here on WSJS. Taking your phone calls at 336-777-1600. So I like Nick Saban. I think he's one of the great coaches of all time in sports, period. Not just college football, sports. But he sounded like the ultimate hypocrite the other day on Capitol Hill. Now, to be fair, a lot of people sound like hypocrites on Capitol Hill. Just kind of comes with the territory, I reckon. But he was at a hearing for the Protect College Sports Act. And he was talking about, you know, NIL and the amount of money that teams are spending to put their rosters together year in and year out. And he was making a point that it's increasing. Every year it gets a little more and a little more and a little more to the point where, you know, he says we've got $40 million rosters out here now. And I'll let you hear the clip, but it just, let's just play the clip.
My first year we had collective at Alabama, $2.7 million. Next year, $7 million. Next year, $10 million. I retired. Next year, $17 million. Next year, $24 million. Now you have schools that have close to $40 million rosters. So if we continue to do that, we're going to lose Olympic sports. We're going to lose non-revenue sports. We're going to lose scholarships. And basically what's going to happen is you're going to have football and basketball succeed, and we'll have club sports for everything else.
Uh-huh. He also made a point that, like, college sports is becoming almost like an arms race with the amount of money being thrown around. And all I'll say is this. He didn't seem to have a problem when his salary increased every single year when he was at Alabama, bit by bit by bit. He didn't seem to have a problem with that. He didn't seem to have a problem with money being thrown around when it wasn't, you know, legal. Because we all know they were paying players. And the SEC, we're paying, not the SEC as a conference, but teams across the SEC, your Georgias, your LSU, we know they were paying players. Didn't seem to have a problem with it then, but now it's like, whoa, pump the brakes. It's too much. It's too much. Why? Because the Big Ten can spend more than you now and the championships show it?
Yeah, they can.
Michigan fan Morgan over here chiming in. So, I love Nick Saban. I do. You know, he's one of the, you know, there's certain figures in sports that, like, beyond sports, I like to listen to them. I like to listen to their, you know, you might call it a motivational speech. I love to listen to them. Nick Saban's one of those people. Coach K is one of those people. But really, it's like now that you're out of it, oh, now we got to pump the brakes. Now that the SEC isn't keeping up as much with the Big Ten, now it's an issue. It just sounds a little hypocritical, is all I'll say. Now, let's transition to this, because I was enjoying watching the Canes last night, watching them storm back in the third period. And then I saw some very distressing news. So upset that I couldn't even finish my dinner. It's very, very upsetting. Aaron Judge. And 336-777-1600. That's the number to call. If you have thoughts on Nick Saban, if you have a reaction to Canes Vegas last night, if you have prediction for Knicks Spurs tonight, we'll get to it. Take your calls, 336-777-1600. It was very frustrating to learn that three-time MVP of my Yankees, the captain, Aaron Judge, is going to be out for an extended period of time after the team announced he's going to the injured list. He's got a right rib injury, and I wouldn't press the panic button or anything. I wouldn't. If you're a Yankee fan, that is. If you're like Josh Graham and you're an Orioles fan, you probably, and not like this news because you never want to see players get hurt, but you probably don't care as much as a Yankee fan does. Like me, or like Morgan, or like Mike Maniscalco of FanDuel Sports Network, who's going to join us in hour number two. How distressing did you find the Aaron Judge news?
I mean, I'm not surprised. He's always hurt in some manner. I'm just happy that it's not a
broken bone.
Oh, gosh. Just get the man a wheelchair. Stanton. Yeah, anyway. Judge, yeah, it was saddening. It's only 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks.
4 to 6 will be reevaluated.
So not too bad. He should still win the MVP. So,
well, Jeff Passan, who covers the major leagues as closely as anybody, he essentially said that in the short term, this is not ideal, but in the long terms, there's no reason to press the panic button. So you're going to see a lot of articles out there today. Is it time for the Yankees to pick? Like, it sucks, but relax. It'll be fine. In fact, this is similar to an injury he dealt with after he dove for a ball back in 2019. He was diagnosed with a stress fracture in his right ribs then and a partially collapsed lung in the following spring training. But he did not miss any games because that was the pandemic delayed start year of 2020 and they didn't play till July. So that's the latest on Aaron Judge. But that was very upsetting. I couldn't finish my dinner. Couldn't do it. Wes and Winston wants in on the Nick Saban conversation. Nick wants him to pump the brakes. It's too much money now, Wes. What do you got?
I wonder why you don't have a problem with Aaron Judge's salary, what they pay him. You think they ought to pump the brakes on Aaron now that he's hurt?
No, I don't.
Uh-huh.
I don't.
You can't discriminate about somebody, about what somebody is worth, because the marketplace will determine what a person's salary should be.
I agree.
And that's the way it should be.
Yes, it is. 100%, Wes. I agree 100% with you.
But you were talking about his salary, that he took his salary every year and his increase, which he should.
Yeah.
Because his team... Here.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with what Nick is making. I just think it's a little hypocritical that now he's like, oh, we got to pump the brakes on what, you know, these players are making and how much they're spending for these teams. Like, I think that's a little hypocritical is all. But I have no problem. I think make what you can make. I say get yours. I'm all for it.
I think he's got a point about affecting the other sports. Because as much as you hate to say it, basketball and football are the revenue, but you need those other sports because not everybody can play basketball and football.
I agree.
And there's got to be somewhere to share the wealth somewhere down the line right there, especially when you're talking the numbers that you're up, that you are, because it's just the way it needs to be.
Wes, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. No, I agree 100%. I don't want to see. I mean, listen, we've got the Super Regionals on. Florida won, Carolina, top fifth, by the way. We've got the Super Regionals on in the studio right here. Like, I don't want to see, you know, anything happen to baseball because of football and basketball. Yeah, they're the revenue drivers, but, I mean, Morgan, you were talking about the crowd that was out at West Virginia today for that game. It was just nuts. Like, the way the stadium set up, like, there's the stadium, and then there's like hills like up that continue to go up even up above the stadium, and there were people all camped out all up on that.
Yeah, the environment for these things are great. I mean, I watch a lot of college sports. I personally think at times, most times, they're better than professional sports.
The environments, for sure.
And even the action on the field. I mean, I feel like sometimes it's even better. And in taking away all the sports but men's basketball and football would be criminal for not only the professional side of sports, but for these people that want to play and get into these sports, all of a sudden just knowing there's no path for them after high school.
Yeah, for sure. And to Wes's point, I mean, I don't want to see, you know, club programs, you know, or these other sports like gymnastics or tennis or things like that, you know, turn into just club sports because there's all the money's going to football. They do need to figure out a system. They do need to figure out a way to share that the right way. But, you know, I got a weird feeling Nick wouldn't be saying this if he was still the coach at Alabama. That's all I'm going
to
say.
And backing the Brinks truck up to some players' houses.
Correct. That
just
was
like
my point.
Some coaches have already admitted to doing, Coach O and a few others.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Yeah.
The Triad's only live sports talk show, The Drive. Will Dalton turns your ride home into a full contact sports debate.
Drive right here on WSJS, where we're asking the question, is tonight a must-win for the Spurs? 336-777-1600. I think it is, in the sense that you do not want to go to Madison Square Garden down 2-0 if you're the Spurs, because that place is about to be a madhouse of epic proportions. And I just think this Knick team is so unified and just so playing together, and Jalen Brunson leading the way and just the way he goes about things, I think all those things combined could really pose a problem for San Antonio if they're down 0-2 going to New York. So 336-777-1600 is the number to call if you have thoughts on that. But this is, we already did Nerd Corner this week, because I went to see Mandalorian and Grogu, so this isn't Nerd Corner, but it essentially is. College Football 27, Madden 27, they had like a official big reveal type thing last night, almost like how Apple does with its products. Like they put something on display and people are starting to play it that like are, I guess, credentialed to play it and review it. And I got to say, it seems like EA really listened.
EA Sports. It's in the game.
I mean, they did. So we're going to mainly focus on the college football piece of this, but I'll pose it to Morgan here. What? Because you came in today, and you were like very excited about this.
I have been playing this series since 2011 when I bought an Xbox and was playing NCAA 07. And I played that for a long time. Then I got NCAA 13 because I couldn't afford 14 when it was $250 for a used game.
Insane.
And then I bought 25 and I was blown away. And I didn't get 26 because I figured it's just like the 25. And this game could make a grown man cry. Graphics that can make a grown man cry.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can get a screenshot here and throw it up here.
And they put a screenshot of Michigan and Ohio State in there, which just made me feel even better.
They did.
But, I mean, they listened to what the fans wanted. More constructive and a revamped defense, which they did completely. 16 new formations, 25 new playbooks that you can use. So each team has a different identity and can use that defensive formation and playbook that they would use in the game. Revamped offense, buttons, hotkeys, everything. Smarter AI as well in the zones. As somebody who likes to think that he's pretty smart and could call plays, I like this.
So here's that picture if you're watching on our YouTube and X. Oh, apparently not. Apparently there's an issue with my file. That's great. If you, I'll see if I can get it on there another way. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're watching on X, I mean, this game does look pretty incredible. I've got the screenshot you were telling me about of Ohio State and Michigan. Hopefully I'll be able to put that on the screen here in just a second. But that's my thing. Like, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big dynasty guy. And here it is, the Michigan-Ohio State screenshot.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Looks like they're going at it in the tunnel there a little bit with the Go Blue in the background. Got that. I got another one I'll throw up of Lane Kiffin. Got to see him in the game for the first time. But I'm not a big dynasty guy, which they're apparently, I don't know if you mentioned that they're not, but they're calling it Blueprint.
Yeah, so they have new blueprints. The way you build schools in Dynasty used to just be you recruit better players, and sometimes you get them, sometimes you don't. Now they have Dynasty points.
Yeah.
And for example, I think Ohio State has like 13,000, and Kent State has 500.
Mm.
So how you build your program and your NIL allowances, which they just added as well, is really going to change the scope of how you can build these programs.
So there's Lane Kiffin on our screen there, newly LSU football coach.
He looks extremely grumpy.
It's accurate. Great game accurate. That's what that is. I'm all about the physics of a game. I'm all about the graphics of a game. Now, there's some people, and I agree with it because I'm a gamer, so I agree with this to a point. Like, I can still pop in Mario Kart on the 64, even though the graphics aren't obviously current day anymore, and have a really good time, because there's a difference between a game looking great and just being so much fun. There is a difference. And with that said, though, I love seeing really great graphics for a game. Like, it's one of the things that hooked me to MLB The Show back when it really started to get going as a young baseball player, because like the graphics were just so ahead of their time on that game. And I did not feel, I got the first rendition of college football, 25. I wasn't that impressed. I wasn't that impressed with, let me say that. I wasn't impressed with the transition from 25 to 26 in terms of the graphics. I didn't get 26 because I just didn't think there was a need to.
It felt like what they've been doing with Madden for what I feel like is the last decade, where
long
they were just
time.
Copy and pasting the game and just updating rosters and maybe jerseys if those were updated. And that's what they did last year, essentially. And I think that most people were expecting that again this year because, you know,
yeah.
It's EA. But no, they listened to what the fans wanted, and it's now a completely different game from Madden, and they added all the modes that the fans wanted. Dynamic weather. You got mascot mashup back.
We got that.
And there's 100 mascots to choose from.
So getting to the Madden piece of things, here's the tush push in Madden 27.
And that's changed too.
Oh, has it?
Yeah, so there's a quarterback sneak meter now where you can't just run it up the middle. You have to get it into the green, and it's dependent on your nose tackle and guards versus the lines and your quarterback's running ability.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And if you hit it on the green, you'll get it. If you hit it on the yellow, it's a dice roll. If you hit it on the red, you just get stuff. Nothing goes.
So I'm throwing up on the screen now. I got the first shot of Fernando Mendoza. By the way, this just, and I can already hear people in the comments, and I know because I read them, like, people always go, like, this screenshot right here of Fernando Mendoza, he's going up against the Seahawks. It looks so good. So, so good. But I can already hear everybody, oh, that's just a screen grab. That's not what it's going to look like when you actually play the game. Maybe not exactly. However, this, again, it looks incredible. I love it.
It does. And now that doesn't matter to me. I play on a TV that is, according to Jay Davis, small for this era, 40 inches, 1080.
Yeah.
So not great quality, but it's still going to run my little Xbox S to the wire, but it's going to look good.
Love that. By the way, So you mentioned dynamic weather, things like that are coming. Getting back to college football, I loved the trailer that had Kurt Cignetti voicing it, and the theme was essentially, you know, some people come here for legacy, some people come here because they love the school, some people, and they do address, some people come here because they want to make wads of cash, and Kurt said, I don't care why you come here, I care what happens after you come here. And it was so good. We have 6-7 celebrations in college football.
We do. I'm so excited.
And I can't wait for that. And you mentioned the three new positions in Road to Glory.
Tight end, edge, and safety. It took us 3 years to get a tight end to play as.
That's right. And back to the graphics piece of this, it's a small thing. Maybe doesn't matter to you. But like the little details in the graphics in terms of the players, like, for example, like the mouthpiece hanging off of the face mask, like if it's not in their mouth and it's just like hanging off of the face mask of the helmet, they have that in the game now. And it's just, it's a little detail, but it matters. And it adds to the immersion. It adds to the realism of the game. Holy cow, I sound like such a nerd, but I am, so I don't care.
And they also have like a historical one where you can see the team's all-time record. And by the way, they got it wrong. Alabama does not have more wins than Michigan. I saw that.
Gotta make sure you get that right. College football 27, Madden 27 revealed last night. We can't wait to play it.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
This is The Drive, talking sports the right way.
The Drive right here on WSJS. Mike Maniscalco of FanDuel Sports Network, Carolina Hurricanes TV voice, going to join us in about 10 minutes. But right now, we got to talk about what might be the best kept secret for the Carolina Panthers. And really, one of the most anticipated starts. I think one of the most anticipated parts of this coming Panthers season is going to be the return of Jonathan Brooks and seeing what that looks like, him and Chuba Hubbard coming out of the backfield. So the Panthers, they've been sharing clips on social media of Jonathan Brooks out there at practice, at OTAs, and I mean, he's zipping through that defense, man. He's looking strong. He really is. I get it. It's OTAs, but it's what we have to go off of right now. And he's got some pop. He's got some pop. And all reports coming out of there, Joe Person of The Athletic, Mike Kay of the Charlotte Observer, like, you see the reports that he's looking good. Like, he's healthy. They're keeping an eye on him. They're pacing him. But sounds like things are going really well out there for him. And one of the things that I really like to see is the tight bond that he's already formed with Chuba Hubbard. They argue quite a bit. Almost like sibling brother argue. Like Chuba kind of has a bit of an older brother energy with Jonathan Brooks. Like they were having apparently an argument the other day about who's taller. Yeah, like a coach had to break it. Like fun play arguments almost. And apparently Jonathan Brooks took a jab, I put in quotations, at Chuba at the press conference the other day. He said Jonathan, he believes he's actually faster than Chuba by a little bit. They got kind of a brother-like relationship. And we also got to see this with some of the things that Chuba said to Jonathan Brooks, you know, in his recovery process and basically telling Jonathan, hey, this is your time, man. This is what you've been waiting for. Like, some really deep words of encouragement. Because Chuba Hubbard, he's been through his own battles in his career as well, and he's had to come up from the bottom. So he's been through some stuff. So I like that bond that's already forming between them that I'm not so sure that Chuba Hubbard and Rico Dowdle shared last year. Also, I think these two could really complement each other very well. A double barrel type situation. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart, anybody? But the reason I really think they can complement each other is because of, you know, the styles of play that each has. Like, Chuba is very strong and a downhill runner, punchy type, whereas Jonathan Brooks, he's got a good catching ability. Now, Chuba he's worked on the jug machines over the years, and he's developed into a pretty solid catcher as well. But Jonathan Brooks, he can catch some passes. Like, if you go back and look at a lot of his tape at Texas, a lot of it was him on screens and getting out wide, and he can get downfield and take it to the house. And he really put a lot of that on display in his Texas tape, to the point where even coming out of the draft a couple of years ago, despite having the ACL injury, he was still regarded as one of the best backs to come out of that draft. Maybe the best had he been completely healthy, but one of even being hurt for sure. And so the Panthers took a chance on him, and I really believe it's going to be one of the most anticipated parts of this coming Panther season is seeing what he's going to be able to do, knocking on wood, assuming he stays healthy. So if he can do that, I think Chuba Hubbard, Jonathan Brooks, that might be one of the best kept secrets, one of the best weapons that the Panthers have at their disposal that we're really not talking all that much about going into this year. Now, let's get to Dalton's dollars. Stack it up, stack, stack, gotta stack
it up. Get the money all the time now. It's time to cash in. Welcome to Dalton's Dollars.
Show me the money!
Show me the money.
Breaking down the board and building the bankroll.
Okay. Made three bets last night. We've been splitting all week long. We've been kind of 500 just about every night. And just having a look at this, took the Canes money line. That cashed.
Show me the money!
Took the over on the total, 5.5. That hit.
Show me the money!
The one that didn't of the three, God, this frustrated me. I took Nikolai Ehlers to score anytime, got great value on it. He did not score at all, having scored the first two goals in game one, a game in which I took Logan Stankoven and Seth Jarvis to have anytime goals. And then in reverse, I take Ehlers last night. He doesn't score. Seth Jarvis gets the game winner. Stankoven gets the first one. Because of course they do. Because of course they do. So that was frustrating. But went 2-1 last night. So we're now 23-20 on our summer bets. And so now looking at Nick Spurs tonight, game two. I get pretty good value, pretty solid on the Knicks to cover as 6.5-point dogs.
Show me the money!
I think they're going to keep it close, but I do think the Spurs are going to win the game. I do think that. I'm going to go over on the total tonight. 217.5 points. I get that at -106 odds.
Show me the money!
And let's add two more to it. I like Wimby, so I took him to have 12 or more rebounds in game one. He had 12 on the dot. I'm going to have him go over 11.5 rebounds tonight.
Show me the money!
And lastly, Karl-Anthony Towns under 3.5 assists.
Show me the money!
Fire it up. That's four on the card. Taking the Knicks to cover at 6.5. Taking the over on the total, 214.5. Cat under 3.5 assists. Wimby over 11.5 rebounds. Stack the deck. We're at a commercial break now in this regional, so I don't know if Carolina's retaking the lead.
Yeah, they haven't. What happened there was they actually just pulled their pitcher after, I think, about 20 pitches because I believe there are runners on first and third with no outs.
Well, that's just lovely.
No scripts, no safe takes, no chance you're bored. You're on the Triad's longest-running live sports talk show, The Drive.
Back at it on The Drive right here on WSJS, where we have just a fabulous heavyweight fight between Carolina and Vegas in the Stanley Cup Final after two games. And now we welcome in Mike Maniscalco, the play-by-play voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on FanDuel Sports Network. Mike, how we doing?
Will, after last night, we're doing fine. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's good to have you here. So I've heard you say a number of times on different broadcasts that these two teams, Vegas and Carolina, they are similar, but they're not the same when you try to compare them. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's they try to do the same thing, which is they use their speed. They use the fact that they are very deep, generate offense to wear down the opposition. But Vegas goes about it a little bit differently. They're not exactly the same team that Carolina is when it comes to the forecheck or the system that they run. They're not the same defensively. They're big. They make it hard for you to get to the front of the net, where Carolina plays more of a man-on-man defense, and not more. That's exactly what they play, Will. So they try to take away your time and space, whereas Vegas just makes it impossible for you to try to get in front of their netminders. So if they're all trying to accomplish the same goals. They're coached very well with John Tortorella behind the Vegas bench, and for my money, the best coach in the NHL, who's Rod Brindamore. They like to use their speed. Vegas has, if we're being honest, a little bit more high-end talent. When you look at Mitch Marner and Jack Eichel and Pavel Dorofeev and Mark Stone, who is a brilliant two-way player. Carolina, their attack is it's not built on star players. It's built on everybody can jump into the party and score a goal and contribute. So they try to limit the shots that their goaltenders see and, you know, shot suppression. That's the same. And they go about trying to win games defense first, which is similar, but they do it in different ways. So that's why I keep using, they play similar, they look similar, but they're not the same. And Vegas is big. They are a big team. They built a big team in the desert, Will.
Mike Maniscalco, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes on FanDuel Sports Network, with us here on WSJS. So in game one, it took Vegas a little while to get going. In game two last night, it took Carolina even longer till the third period to get going. What do you think shifted for Carolina in the third period last night?
It's going to be real simple. They got an incredible individual effort out of Logan Stankoven, and a puck got behind Carter Hart, and then that got the team going. But, you know, the funny thing is, game one, both teams will tell you they were sloppy. That's not the way that they want to play. They don't want to play 5-4 games, again, similar. But the Canes needed to get one past Carter Hart, because I could defend it if this was a trial, that Carolina really had the better of play in game number two. They just couldn't get anything past the Vegas goalie. And then once that goal gets in and the ice gets tilted and Carolina just keeps going shift after shift, and then they tie the game. But I really think that was the difference. Just sometimes you got to get one past the opponent, and then everything really starts, not that it becomes easier, but you can start dictating how play is going to go, and that's what happened last night.
Now, I thought it was very fitting that it was Seth Jarvis that netted the game-winning goal in overtime, because, you know, that top line has just gotten so much criticism, you know, gradually throughout the playoffs, and now, you know, on this stage, it's even more amplified. So I just thought it was so cool that he was the one to net that. How big of a deal was that for you that it was Seth Jarvis that got the game winner?
Oh, I think there are two guys that you could point to who it would be massive if they got the overtime game-winning goal. Seth Jarvis at one and Sebastian Aho at two. By the way, Sebastian Aho had a fabulous game, even though he doesn't really show up on the score sheet with goals, but he was all over that game. I thought it was his best game of the playoffs. But for Seth Jarvis to score that goal, to see it go in for his first overtime playoff winner, I hope that if and I know people like to point out, well, these guys aren't doing this or doing that. Well, this line is seeing the other team's best defensive line all through the postseason. That's part of it. I know that fans don't ever like to give credit to the other team for being able to play well. But, Will, that's a thing in sports. Might be breaking news here today on your show, on The Drive. The other team gets paid to play, and they've got good players usually. So that was part of it. But for Seth Jarvis, he's one of these players who just wants to win so badly, and he wants to be one of the reasons why the team wins. For him to see that puck go in the back of the net, I mean, you could almost see it was like an exorcism. Like, you could see the bad spirit going away from him, and the smile on his face to get that. So I think it's absolutely huge. Will it be a big factor the rest of the series? Like, will he all of a sudden go on a goal-scoring spree? We'll see. I'll go Zen philosophy on all of us here right now. But I think that for Seth and for me, from my vantage point, that's going to be big for him, because now he can just exhale and just play, because he's had that big moment now in the postseason.
Mike Maniscalco with us here on WSJS of FanDuel Sports Network. So this is a Hurricanes team that has not lost back-to-back games since January, which is just stupid. And we were listening to Taylor Hall when he spoke to the media the other day, and he was being asked specifically about the top line. And, you know, he just talked about it's coming. It's going to be there. They just got to stay with it. And that seems to be the theme of this Carolina team throughout the playoffs is no matter the situation, they respond and they stay with their game plan all the way down to being down 2-0 in what some maybe thought was a must-win game last night, and they pop in the third period. How much of a testament of that, what we saw last night, do you think is to just the playoff experience that they have at the highest levels?
I think you can attribute some of that. I'll just also attribute it to their really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll also buy into this one. And Will, if you're ever in Raleigh and you ask Rod Brindamore about his top line, he'll go, who are you talking about? Yahoo line? You know, right? So, and I don't want to get into coach speak right now,
yeah.
But when you say the top line, I am going to honestly say from Rod Brindamore's seat, his top line is Jordan Staal with Jordan Martinook and Nikolai Ehlers for the minutes that he asked them to play. We've got to break the habit. Did you play EA Sports NHL hockey when you were a kid?
I did.
Okay, so we have to break the habit of like first line, second line, third line, checking line. Like that doesn't exist really with this Carolina Hurricanes team, because the strength is it's the sum. It's not the parts. So, yes, the Aho line with Seth Jarvis and Andrei Svechnikov, they're supposed to be the talented goal-scoring line. But this postseason, the top offensive line is Logan Stankoven's line with Taylor Hall and Jackson Blake with what they've been able to do. The best line, the most consistent line, perhaps all postseason, could be Jankowski, Carrier, and Robinson. Not that they've gotten a ton of goals for it, but in the minutes that they play, they've been impactful minutes that have changed courses of games in all four series now. I mean, the Mark Jankowski goal that ties it last night is huge. So I get what you're coming at, and I'm not trying to deflect on this one, but I just figured I could give you a coach's answer. I'm never going to do it for the rest of my life, but here's the good one. So top line, which one are you talking about, Will? Oh, the Aho line. Yeah, this is big, but remember, Rod broke him up too last night in the second period to put Jordan Martinook up there with Andrei Svechnikov and put Seth Jarvis on the wing for Jordan Staal with Nikolai Ehlers. And did it give him a little jolt? Did it change things up? I mean, they won the game, so you can say yes. Will they stay with this for game three? I don't know. They might go back to how they started game number two. But the strength, again, for this Canes team is their ability to move parts around when they need to, but it's not like they're locked into, well, if this line isn't scoring, we have no chance of winning.
Mike Maniscalco with us here on WSJS. A couple more things for you on the way out because we know you got to get to Vegas. So let's ask you about that because, you know, the Canes have not lost on the road in these playoffs. They have not done that. And we've seen two incredible games, just back and forth, you know, counterpunch games between these two. What do you expect to see when we get to game three in Vegas?
Exactly what we've seen in games one and two.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see why we're going to see anything different just because the margin of error for both of these teams is so slim. They're both really good teams. And, you know, what we saw in game one got tightened up a little bit from both teams in game two. More adjustments will be made. You know, people say in a series, there's usually that one stinker game where one team blows out the other. I don't think we're going to get that with these two teams. I just really don't. I expect everything to be close. And the one thing that everybody should take out of these first two games is don't look at the scoreboard until the game is over, because neither of these teams will look at it and say, oh, we're down 2-0. It's over. You know, Carolina could not have started the Stanley Cup final any better than what they did in game one, 25 seconds in with Nikolai Ehlers, and then they're up 2-0. But Vegas doesn't panic, and neither does Carolina, because they have confidence in their system, in their players, that they're going to get their bounce, they're going to get their opportunity. So it's a cliche, but it's maybe the easiest question for me to answer. We're going to see more of the same. I don't see this series changing on a dime, other than Vegas might be without one of their best defensemen, Braden McNabb, and what that does in this series, because McNabb is a big, tough defenseman to try to get around. And he took a puck in the face up high last night early in the first period. And if he can't go, they've got other players who can step in, but McNabb is a big loss just because he's a great penalty killer. He plays mean. He plays nasty. He's one of those guys you hate playing against in a playoff series.
All right, Mike, put your Yankee hat on real quick. How bummed out were you to see this Aaron Judge news? 4 to 6 weeks, he's going to be reevaluated.
Yeah, anytime you see any player, let alone superstar players, have to miss time in the middle of the season, it just stinks for everybody. You know, you get robbed of being able to see something special for 2 months. So as a Yankee fan, it's brutal because he is really the catalyst of that team. You can look at others, but let's face it, when he steps up to the plate, he's the guy who puts the fear of God into the opposition. And it's not Barry Bonds during his prime, but he is one of those guys where, you know, when he's coming up right now, you just expect something good to happen. So it's tough. But now the other part of it, if you're the Yankees, this is going to force you to try to do a couple of different things. I know Morgan on the other side is a Yankee fan and a good man. Oh, this show has gone up 5,000% just by one guy taking it, just by one guy taking another job. And look, I'm giving you credit on this one too, Will.
Thank you so much.
So you're welcome. But if anything, what I hope is the Yankees then get better at doing the little things, right? You know, hit and run, bunting, going back to small ball, and, you know, trying to let a couple other guys, you know, you got some boppers still in the lineup. But no, anytime, and I mean it now, I'm at this point in my life where I am, the Yankees are the baseball team that I cheer for. And I, you know, I still get the charge out of watching them win, but I get a bigger charge out of watching great players do great things. And whenever, I get rivalries and you hate these guys, but I'm not at that plane of existence anymore. I just want to see great players do great things. So anytime they're hurt, it's not good for the game. And hopefully it's not the serious situation that they're talking about that it could be. Hopefully he'll be able to bounce back from this and help the Yankees win another World Series. There you go. There's my bias. There's my Yankee fan at the end of this.
Mike Maniscalco, FanDuel Sports Network. Safe travels to Vegas. We'll be listening to you and Trip Tracy on the call, and we'll do it again sometime soon.
Sounds good, Will. You got it.
There he goes, Mike Maniscalco of the FanDuel Sports Network. And then Morgan decides to pop onto my screen right when he hangs up. That's nice. Always got to steal the spotlight.
My job.
Yeah, saying things like Indiana's the hoop state.
They are! Indiana's the hoop state.
Imposter.
Larry Bird.
Michael Jordan.
Larry Bird.
Exactly. Michael Jordan, Steph Curry. Could go on down the list.
Larry Bird.
Yeah, that's what I thought. By the way, the YMCA. You might want to go this weekend. Might have a little free time, and you might want to get some working out in. If you're at the if you are near the Alexander County, Davie County, Stokes County YMCAs, well, they have 24/7 access, and we get it. Life is busy.
That's why it's the weekend now.
So your workout doesn't have to wait anymore. Get over there, morning, afternoon, night, does not matter. 24/7. You can work it out whatever it works for you. More flexibility means more convenience, means fitness on your schedule, only at the Y.